Let's take a moment to seek refuge in the Noble Triple Gem. Observe the precepts and commence with today's proceedings. There's a slight echo on the line, I think. If that can be adjusted, that would be great. Right. Let's chant the Namaskara. Commence.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa.
Let's start with a quick recap from last week, shall we? So what we're talking about, this is really practical philosophy. You can call it Buddhist philosophy if you like. I was listening to one of our monks the other day giving a talk. And something he said struck me really. So he was speaking to a group of non-Buddhists, so to speak. And he was explaining to them who a Buddhist is. So what he said was, one who has studied some kind of science and has become an expert in that, you would call them a scientist. And he said, in the same way, one who has studied happiness and who has become an expert in that, you call him a Buddhist. So I thought that was quite a simple but a very eloquent way of putting it. Because once you've explained it that way to a group of non-Buddhists, of course they become very curious. And then naturally they're going to ask the question, how do you make such a bold claim? Aren't we happy already? I also know how to be happy. I also studied how to be happy. And either through religion or other means, I have learned how to be happy. So then the conversation turns from there to one that is based on religion, to one that is based on, well, what is this happiness that you and I speak of? Do we speak of the same happiness, or do we speak about two different kinds of happiness? And I think that is it's a fantastic place to anchor this conversation. Because we wouldn't need to do any of this if it didn't make us happy, right? After all, that's why we do everything in life. If anything we do doesn't make us happy, what do we tend to do? Stop doing it. Right? When you're at the gym and you're working out, at what point do you stop and take a break? When that pain becomes unbearable. Meaning, you don't want to be in pain. Nobody wants to be in pain. Nobody wants to suffer. Don't you believe that that is the whole purpose of your existence? Now that you're alive, you have to find a way to make this existence bearable. To put it quite bluntly. Because it doesn't seem like, you know, we always get to call the shots. And all sorts of things go on in and around us. I mean, quite literally, in and around us. And so we have to somehow find a way to make our existence bearable. And that's what people do. Because it seems like, you know, your birth was not your choice. It doesn't seem like that, does it? It was my choice to be born. Soon enough, you'll realize that it was. If you haven't already. Otherwise, how would there be arhants? Those who have chosen not to be born. Well, if you can choose not to be born, then it has to be your choice to be born, right? So, it's all cause and effect. The problem is people don't understand some of the causes to be able to achieve the desired effect. When you don't understand the causes behind certain effects, you feel helpless. That's the problem. That's why people are helpless in the face of various psychological, mental emotions, negative emotions particularly. Now, the other day I was informed that someone had jumped off a multi-story building and committed suicide somewhere in and around Colombo. I didn't know, I thought it was just a rumor. Is it? Ah, okay. So, do you think that they felt they had a choice? You might think they had a choice. Right? You might think, well, they needn't have done that. Surely, if they had spoken with someone, if they had discussed their problem with someone, they could have found a solution of some sort. So, you know, from my perspective, what's pitiful is not the fact that, and please don't misunderstand me, try not to misunderstand me, it's difficult. It's not the fact that what happened happened. It's the fact that they felt like they had no choice. That's pitiful. Because that we can do something about. That I can do something about. You can do something about that. In fact, that's what we're doing something about right now. You know, you go through life, all of you, all of us, we go through life. And there are points in life where you feel that you have no choice. And then you get stuck. And you feel helpless. Anger, resentment, regret. Terrible one, isn't it? Regret. And these feelings of loneliness. When you feel like there's no one for you. No one cares about you. And that everyone is just trying to walk over you. And also when, you know, feelings of disappointment, when you worked your socks off day and night and you worked many, many, many hours, days, weeks, months, years even, invest a whole lifetime building something up, and then the whole thing comes collapsing and crumbling down. Sometimes it can be a business, sometimes it can be a marriage, it can be a life, it can be your child. When these things happen, how do you feel? Pretty helpless, right? You feel like you're lost. You tend to ask these questions, why me? So then we have to ask the question, who would you rather? But it feels like that, why me? I mean, it's a fair question to ask, why me when I don't have an alternative? Seriously, it is a fair question to ask from one angle when you look at it that way. So what you're asking is, why me when I don't know what to do in these situations? See, when you feel hungry, you don't get that question, do you? Why me? Why don't you feel that way? Tell me. When you feel hungry, why don't you feel that way? Because you have a solution. That's why. So then you don't feel like you're at your wit's end. You don't feel like you're at a deadlock. You don't feel like you're at a dead end. Don't know what to do. No answers, no solutions. Where do I turn to? Who do I ask help for? Because when you're armed with knowledge, you can put that knowledge into action. And that is very powerful. That is why they say knowledge is power. Because when you have knowledge, you can put it into action. And then, you don't have to stop at inaction. In other words, when you have a problem, if you can take some action about it, you don't feel helpless. So when do you feel helpless? When you can't take any action. Am I right? So someone holds you to gunpoint. I say you're walking down the street, right? You get mugged. Someone holds you at gunpoint and says, give me all your money. Say it's a dark alley somewhere. Right? There's no one to... You quickly glance, look around, no one to help. So there's no point screaming because they're probably going to slit your throat or something or pull the trigger. So at that point, you feel there's nothing you can do. So you only have one choice. Well, either you have to give up your life or you have to give your money. One or the other should happen. And that's because at those moments you can't take any action. You can't take an action that's going to take you out of this problem. Because if someone held a gun to your head, you are now on the horns of a dilemma. You should either give up your life or you should give up your money. Neither of these two things is something you want to do. See, when you're angry, it's the same thing. I take anger as an example. For some of you, anger might not be a big issue, but for there will be others for whom anger is your best friend. No, seriously, for some, anger is their best friend because it is what they resort to. When something around them doesn't work out, some people I know, they use anger as their, what shall we say, that's their oasis kind of thing. Like when they're in a problem, like someone around them is not doing what they want them to do, things are getting messy, the simplest solution they believe is to just get angry. Because when they're angry, they can be overpowering, overbearing over everyone else, and then everyone else just shuts up. So that seems to be a solution. And people tend to take that, not because they like to hurt other people. Think about this for a second. People resort to anger not because they like to or want to hurt the other people around them by being angry and showing others who's boss. It's because they have no alternative. An angry man is a very helpless man. They don't know what else to do. So the best emotional reaction you can have towards an angry person is really sympathy. Some might say empathy, but I think it's more actually sympathy. You can send them a condolence card or something. Don't do it at that time. They'll send you one. Take a moment, think of a time where you might have been angry at some point in your life. Right? Did you enjoy that? If you had to be angry from here on till the end of your life, would you opt for that? If I had a magic wand, I was going to curse you. Right? And I'm going to say, I want to curse you. Actually, no, put the curse aside. I'm going to give you a boon. By which I mean, I'm just going to use my magic wand and I'm going to cast a spell. You can choose what you want, okay? So you can choose one of these two. Either you can be angry every day for the rest of your life. Or you can be, I don't know, there's nothing to compare it with because it's the worst thing. There's no one. You might spend your life and there may be even people at home who you feel they're always angry, they're always on edge, right? And very easily irritated. They're always very annoyed. But I need you to understand something for me. I need you to understand that it is not because they enjoy that. It's a moment where they feel really helpless. You be the better person then. Be the better man. In such situations, ladies and gentlemen, you be the one who can look at them And remember these words, the words you've heard today, and remind yourself, oh, hold on. It's not my place to react to this. I just need to understand and empathize with them. They're only angry because they have no other alternative, no solution. They're helpless. What does a baby do when it's hungry? Ask for food. A baby, an infant, it cries. Why? Why does it not come and go to a restaurant or something and order like you do? Why does it not do what you do? Because it's not armed with that knowledge. It has not acquired the skill of language. Yeah? So it cannot think things through. And even if it could, it would not be able to express its ideas. So it cannot go look for food. So it resorts to the only thing it can do, which is to cry. So that's when it's angry, or hungry. What about when a kid wants to, I don't know, it's got a tummy ache. Then what does it do? Still cry. Headache? Backache? What other aches? And every other thing. What does a baby do? Cry. When a baby cries, what do you get? Do you feel angry? I mean, why cry? For heaven's sake. Is that what you do? Like your baby's crying. I mean, geez, if you want something, just ask. Would you say that? I mean, the baby's crying. Like it's crying, like it's been crying for hours. And what, do you turn it on its head and start spanking it? No, why don't you do that? Because you know that the baby, that's what babies do. They cry because they don't know any better. Yeah? So what do you say about an angry man then? That's just a grown-up baby. It's just a big baby, that's all. Do you have a big baby at home? I'll look away, now you can answer. Because I'm the only one who's looking at you. You're all looking at me, right? So you'd be fine answering these questions as long as you're only looking at me. Don't look at each other. So when I look away, you can keep your secrets and still answer the question. So I think every home has an angry baby, has a big baby. But, you know, our place is simply to understand that's only because, well, you know the adage, hurt people. When they are hurt, they don't know anything else to do than to hurt, because what do you do? I mean, when the mind starts vexing, it has to come out of it some way. Just keep your mind to a vexed mind. Right? Now, remind yourself of a time either when you were angry or someone else close to you was angry. And try and sort of think about what they're going through at that time. Like, put your mind to their mind and see if you can read their mind. Just imagine it. You know, if someone came and pricked you with a needle, can you stop the reaction, it's almost like a knee-jerk reaction. You go, ouch! Can you stop that? You can't. Why is that? Because it's, you know, you have to express your pain. You have to vent it. And of course you understand that there's no point in doing that. What's the point of saying, ouch? What good does that do? Say a deaf man comes and pricks you with a needle. You go, ouch. He's deaf. He's not going to stop just because you said ouch. What's the point? There's no point. But you can't stop yourself from going ouch because that's what you're programmed to do. Because you have no alternative. In such moments, you're helpless. Now, you being the better man, in all of these situations, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to be able to look at people and understand why people respond in such ways You know, this is actually about understanding how minds work, both yours and that of others. Because if you jump into the same pit, then who's going to pull them out of it? This is usually what tends to happen, right? When two people live together, are together, right? One person gets angry. Soon enough, what happens to the other person? It's almost like it's induced anger, isn't it? Because what happens is they start saying nasty things, and the other person starts getting offended, and then they start getting angry, and then what happens the other way around? Now you start playing tennis with each other, right? Bad words, swear words, right? Hurtful words, huh? These things, it's just one thing turns into the other, and soon enough, it's a fight. Ring a bell? I'll look away. No, but this is not only something that happens at your home or in your life. This is typical. It happens everywhere. It happens everywhere because wherever you look, what's there are minds. That's why. Like I always say, there are no such things called good people and bad people. There are simply minds. And Arahant doesn't vex simply because there are no causes that lead to vexation. If there were those causes in an Arahant's mind, an Arahant would also vex. The only reason you call an Arahant is because in that mind there are no causes that lead to vexation. That's why. It's not magic. It's not magic. I mean, this is standard stuff, but it's the stuff that we tend to forget when we are in those situations. And the same goes on the other side of the coin. Now I talked about anger. What about when you see someone dancing up and down, singing, you know, partying and enjoying themselves? That again is a situation where they are vexed and they want to display their joy. They want to display their happiness, and so they have to dance to do that. Just think about it for a second. If you were not dancing for exercise, because you can dance for exercise, that is also acceptable, it's done. If you weren't dancing for exercise, what is the point of dancing? What do you achieve out of dancing? Sorry, I hope I'm not bursting any bubbles or making life unlivable for a lot of you. I'm just saying, you know, these are some of the things you have to do to make life, your existence bearable. You agreed with me at the start. So I asked the question, why dance? Why do you dance? I mean, I could ask myself the same question because, you know, I've been there, done that, right? So, but, you know, I want you to start to think about these things. Why do you dance? And then we know there are all kinds of dances. There's salsas and waltz and there's ballroom dancing and ballet dancing and, you know, all sorts of dances. So, you know, see, there's not just dancing. There's so many different kinds of dancing. So there must be a reason why people dance. I mean, if just people had to dance for some reason, you know, one kind of dancing would be enough, right? I mean, even in Sri Lankan culture, we have Kandyan dance, we have this dance, that dance, all kinds of dance. Why do people dance? What does dancing give you? Does it fill your stomach? I mean, if you're hungry and you dance and you're full? Exercise, I get it. Right? You have to move your arms and legs just to get some movement, right? Flex those muscles a bit, right? And give the body a good shake. And that's fine, I understand that. But if not for that, why dance? What does it give you? Yes. Apparently, people do it because it makes them happy. What is it that you're trying to make happy? The mind. So why do you have to move the body for that? I mean, I get it. If you like, you know, if you sat down like this, like I'm sat right now, and you did the waltz in your mind, I get that. You close your eyes and do the salsa. That I understand. Oh, if rock dance is your thing, then you do that, right? But you sit down with your hands clasped like this, right? Legs crossed like this, right? And you do your dancing in your mind. I get that, because it's the mind that needs to be happy. Okay. Why move the body? And why does it have to be to a rhythm? Why do you need music for that? Folks, I need you to think. I'll tell you something. You've been doing this because you see other people doing this. There's no other reason, absolutely no other reason you dance. The only reason you have dance, you dance, and you will dance is because you've seen other people do that. And they say that that is a way to express their happiness and their joy. My question is, how? These are the questions you never asked. I have to ask them. Because it's my place to ask these questions and ask these questions so that you begin to question the things you do. And only for the reason that you, from here on, do something meaningful with your life. Because what happens if you do things that are meaningless? Is that a problem? If you do something meaningless with your life, is that a problem? Does it hurt anyone? It doesn't hurt anyone, it only hurts you. Because you're spending your hard-earned, what? Money? No, money is nothing. Hard-earned life. This life that you have, right? Say you have 8 years of life. An 80-year lease is what you get when you start. So, sorry, those who are approaching 80, 120, okay? 100. I thought I'd have no pedicure by the end of the rest of them. Okay, 120-year lease. Fair enough? Okay, I'd live up to that long and come and tell me, and then I'll give you another extension. 120-year lease, right? You get that, and in that time, you have to work out one thing and one thing alone. What is that one thing? How to be happy. Well done. You're given 120 years lease to work out one thing: how to be happy. That's all. Do you think there's anything else you have to do in that 120 years? Anything else? No. That's the one thing you have to do. See? So the purpose of your existence has to be that then. How do I be happy? And here's the deal, folks. If you can work that out in the first year of your life, okay, let's imagine if you could work it out in the first year of your life, the first year, now you have 119 years where you can actually be happy and not try to be happy. It's not one and the same. Being happy and trying to be happy, can that be the same thing? No. One is, it's an exploration, it's an adventure, it's trying to figure out where the other is, it's a state. It's a state of mind. It's happy. That's it. Done. Found it. Good. Now, take the Buddha's life, for example. The first 35 years of his life, he tried to be happy. And then the remainder of his life, he was happy. So these are, you know, you need to find the date in your existence where you can become a Buddha. Forget about what this Buddha means. Whether it's you have to find a Bodhi tree to sit under, or you have to meditate, or Satrasatipatthanas and all this. Put that to aside. Just take the principle. The principle of this is, don't you all agree that you have to have some day in your life on which you can become a Buddha? In other words, figure out how to be happy. And then from that day onwards, you don't have to keep trying to be happy. Don't you feel you all deserve that date in your life? a day in your life, even if it's in the, even if it's on your 119th birthday. So now you have 1 year left. You can actually be happy without trying to be happy. Don't you agree? But think about where you are right now in your life. Forget the Dhamma for a second. Forget what you have learned coming here week on week. Right? Just put that to aside for a second. Whatever age you are, right? If you start from the point of your birth, ignoring even your life before this, let's just assume for a second that there was no life before this. Let's just work on this life that you have. Say you're 25 now. 25 years of your life, you have already consumed from the 120-year lease that you have been given to figure out how to be happy and then be happy. What would you rather be doing? Trying to be happy or be happy? Please answer.
Yes.
Good. So, if you had a choice, would you not try to figure out how to be happy on day one? And then for the remainder of 119 years and 364 days, be happy? Isn't that what you'd rather be? Or would you rather just try to keep on doing things to be happy and on the last day figure out how that is, just the day before you're dead, and then be happy on the last day? Is that what you would rather? Of course not. Only a fool would say that. So all of you want to figure out how to be happy as soon as possible. So that you can be happy for the rest of your lease. All in agreement? Fantastic. So why? So you've tried all sorts, haven't you, by this point? You've tried so many different things. I mean, this room is a great specimen, because you have people from all walks of life, people who've done so many different things and gone to the pinnacle of their careers. So this room full of people is a perfect example of the fact that people are constantly trying to be happy, but still haven't achieved it. Each and every one of you has a story. And if you go walk back in that story, the various milestones that you would have passed, and if I asked you the question, why, sir, why, madam, did you do that at that point in your life? You'll have one answer to give me. It's because I wanted to be happy. You got married. I ask you why? I had no choice. No, because you wanted to be happy. You started a family. Why? Wanted to be happy. If you go back a few more years, right? Maybe you got yourself, you went to university. Why? To be happy. Then you started work. Why? To be happy. You bought a car. Why? To be happy. Do you build a house? Why? To be happy. You didn't rent, you rather chose to build a house for yourself. Why? To be happy. And then you decided it had to be a big house. Why? With a big lawn. Why? In a gated community. Why? And then you decided to keep some pets. Why? Today you have 3 dogs and 2 cats. Why? Why? Because you're so kind towards animals. If it didn't make you happy, would you? No. Because you want to be happy. So you had 1 kid because you wanted to be happy. Didn't work. So what did you do? Had another one. I mean, just don't learn, do you? Life keeps trying to teach you lessons, but you just don't learn, do you? In my mother's family, she's 1 of 10. So that's a perfect example, and still Achyamma's not happy. So I use that as an example to tell my mother. That they, you know, I don't mind if people had children because they wanted to have children. That's okay. You know, if there was a law that said you have to have children, then have children. Then even I would have to have children if there was a law that dictated that. But there's no such law, meaning you're free to make these choices. When you're free to make these choices, I believe that's a huge responsibility upon the person who has to make the choice. Because what comes with great power? Great responsibility. What is this power I speak of? The power of choice. That's what it is. When you have the power of choice, ladies and gentlemen, that's a huge responsibility. Because what if you make the wrong choice? Well, the consequences, you have to bear the consequences. And aren't you? See, there are certain turns you took in your life and certain things you brought into your life, and now you can't reverse. Now they're yours. You have to deal with them. There's no going back now. No returns, no refunds. That's what the midwife said, right? When she brought your firstborn to you? That's how it is. Once again, I have no issue with anyone doing things if they had to do them. But that's not why we do them. It's because we think that they're a means to another end. But alas, we are blinded. We are lost. We've never had a good teacher. You know, we all need a teacher, ladies and gentlemen. Even at this age, you need a teacher. Wouldn't you agree? A man who's 85, don't you think he needs a teacher? I'll tell you what, because he'll walk down the street and he's earned himself a fortune, he's a good affluent person, right? He walks down the street and there's a showroom. In that showroom, they say there's a new exercise machine. He can't even get on it. But there's a new exercise machine and it's the best thing, it's the bee's knees, you have to have it. Right? They do all that marketing, and the next thing you know, he's paid for it and they've delivered it to his house. And now it's there. See, because he had no teacher, he's 85. Because he had no teacher, now he has an exercise machine at home which he can do nothing with. But somehow they convinced him that he needed it. Because he had no teacher, the salesman became his teacher. There are plenty of examples where you spend money on things you don't need. Do I need to call them out, or can't you come up with your own list? I asked you to do some homework. Remember? Good. So, did you try it? Go home and have a look at a few things you have around you and ask yourself what value you would give them. No matter what price you had to pay for them, there's an even bigger price which you paid for, and with an even bigger price which you paid without even knowing. See, if you bought something, let's say, that cost you, say, 50,000 or 100,000, right? If you bought something that cost you 100,000, today you wonder, why did I buy that? Okay, 5,000. Keep it simple, 5,000, right? You bought something for 5,000 rupees, and today you wonder, why in the heck did I buy that? I don't want it, but I bought it. You know, it's not just the 5,000 that you have paid for it. Now that you've bought it, you have to look after it. Because it's still 5,000. Whether you want it or not. Isn't that why people hoard things? Like, there are plenty of things you might have at home which you can't make yourself up to throw them out. Why? I still paid 5,000 for it. I paid for it, you know, even though I don't need it, I still paid for it. So I still paid for it. And that's money I've paid. So I have to look after it. And so people struggle to throw things out. So we have this hoarding culture. I mean, some communities, it's not so much. Some cultures, they don't have this problem that much. Maybe because they buy most things on credit, so it's actually not their money. But typically, if you buy something, you feel like you can't throw it out. We have a lot of that in our culture, don't we? We have a separate room, don't we, in our houses? A storeroom of stuff that we know we will never need, but we just can't make our minds up to dispose of them. Every Sri Lankan home, I think, has one. That's a fun fact for those listening to this talk from around the world. So if you come down, don't worry, there's always a spare room in every house. And you want to find somewhere to stay the night. That's because today you realize that they don't have that value that you once attributed to it. Because value is never something that is intrinsic in an object. So why do people go through that experience time and time and time again? It's because they don't have a teacher. My objective is to give you a teacher. I'm not your teacher. I'm trying to give you my teacher. Yeah? If I were your teacher, I'd always have to be with you to catch your fish for you. And I know that that's not a good deal. One, because I can't be with each and every one of you. Right? And two, no, I'm not going to come home with you. And three, I'd rather you were equipped with the same knowledge that I possess. Because when you have that knowledge, you won't feel helpless in the face of temptation. Then you won't fall for a sales talk. You won't fall for that. Plenty of times you would have in the past fallen for sales talks. You won't fall for that. You will always be able to respond to necessity. Not mental though, because once you understand what I have to share with you, mental necessity will be a thing of the past. But for that you have to understand it. Not just learn it, but actually understand and internalize this information. The physical necessity I can't do anything about. For as long as you exist, it'll always be there. So you will be hungry today, you will be hungry tomorrow as well. Even after you become an arahant, that will still be there. That's why they're called the four requisites, and you can't do without them. For as long as you're alive, you will need them. Those are the four necessities, the bare necessities. You can't do without them. But the mind does not need something else to be happy. The mind does not need to do something to be happy. Although right now you might disagree with me. How, Swami Nasa, can you say that? I'm happy when I have a party at home. That's why I have a party. How can you say that the mind does not need a party to be happy? Every weekend I throw a party. Every other weekend I call my friends over. That's what I do. I mean, isn't that how we have to have fun? My question is, why do you need to have fun? Just be fun. I mean, having fun is, there's a lot of work. Just ask yourself, organizing a party. You want to invite 10 of your best friends over. Organizing a party, is that not hard work? If you could, just think for a moment, if you could experience that fun of the party without all the hard work of organizing the party, the washing up afterwards, this inviting people, and then also you invite one person, the other person doesn't get invited, and then you have to like go through all that as well, right? Mending broken, bridges, right? Trying to keep people happy. Is this easy? Because, you know, when you invite one person, you have to always also think what, you know, he's going to go and tell the other people. And then they're going to wonder why I didn't invite them. Then I have to invite them as well. So now you're inviting them not because you like them. I'll tell you one thing for sure. Not everyone you invite to a party is someone you want to have at the party. Agreed or not? Of course. How do I know this? I read it in a book. A book called Life. Not everyone you invite to a party is someone you want to have at the party. Thus you have to play a little bit of politics. That's what they call politics, right? There are many ticks. So there are many is poly. So there are many ticks you have to make, so it's called politics. But joking aside, you know, that's what I said, existence. You have to have some way to make it bearable. It seems like that, I believe. You know, what you did today to make you happy doesn't make you happy tomorrow. See what a foul deal that is. Your husband says, "Hey, honey, can we have some string hoppers today?" "Yeah, sure. How come?" "I love string hoppers." "Brilliant. Now I know what I have to make for the rest of his life." So today you make string hoppers, next morning you make string hoppers, the next morning you make string hoppers. Before you know it, ladies and gentlemen, he has another relationship. I'm sorry to put it so bluntly. But you know what I'm trying to say. You understand where I'm coming from. This is why it's so complicated. Don't you feel life is so complicated? Because what you do today, remember, the purpose of your life is to achieve happiness. That's what you all are trying to do for that over that course of 120 years. That's all you want to do. Try and somehow figure out how to be happy and then be happy for the remainder of that life. You don't like to keep working out how to be happy. Think about retirement for a second. But wouldn't you like to retire at 20 if you could? Earn all the money that you needed, right? Find a nice place to live, right? Have all the things you want, and then from there on, not have to work for someone. Just relax, do whatever you want. I had set my goals on retiring at 40. Wouldn't you rather retire at 20? Anyone here who says, no, I want to work even the day before I die. I love going to work. Of course not. Because it's not trying to be happy that any one of us enjoys. It's being happy. But we have to still keep trying because we haven't figured it out. And that's laborious. It's a burden. It's a heavy weight on our shoulders. It's painful. But we endure that pain because we believe that somehow one of these days I'm going to figure it out. And because you believe one of these days you're going to figure it out, you keep asking people. People you come across, people you meet on the street, people who are your friends on Facebook. "How do you be happy?" And they say, "I went on a trip to Malawi." Like, oh, that's where I have to go next time then. And then you go there. No. And then you go back on Facebook again. Didn't work. Where should I go? Dubai. Ah, of course. That's what the place I didn't try. So Dubai is where I'm going to be happy. So the next time you get on a flight to Dubai. You don't stop to think why people in Dubai get on another flight to go somewhere else. See, these are the obvious things that we are so blind to. But the thing is this though, right? When you don't have this lens that I'm talking about, even if reality was looking at you in your face, you still wouldn't see it. Because you need this lens from which to look at life. It's like, imagine Imagine now, we don't tend to see ultraviolet, right? Can we see ultraviolet? No, right? We can't see ultraviolet. But imagine I gave you a lens, and through that lens you'd be able to see the ultraviolet spectrum, or light waves in that spectrum. Just imagine the truth was like that. It's always there. Right? So the sun emits all sorts of radiation, and ultraviolet is also one of them. But you don't see it, because it's not in the visible spectrum. Imagine I gave you a lens, and once you put that lens on, now you start to see ultraviolet. Then you'd see, geez, it's everywhere. So it's there, you just don't see it. That's why I say, although I, you know, kind of mock you for going to the airport and then, you know, to your destination, trying to board a flight to your destination, and then you see people coming the other way, and why don't you stop to ponder why this is going on? It's because, although truth is staring at you in the face, you don't see it. And that's actually not your fault. It's because you've not had a teacher who's given you that lens. I never had the power to see truth, even when it was staring at me in my face, because I just didn't have the lens through which to look at. So this is this looking glass that I want to offer you. That's why we're talking about value. This philosophy, this doctrine, this teaching, it has to be your teacher, not me. In fact, ladies and gentlemen, I can't actually do this for you. There's nothing I can do for you, honestly. Because I can turn you around at the airport and say, there's no point boarding that flight, let's go back home, because what you're doing is pointless. But your mind will still keep longing for it. You'll still keep wanting it. Don't you ever do things that your parents, your friends tell you not to? Even when you know it's the wrong thing to do, because people say that's wrong, you shouldn't be doing it, don't you still do it anyway? I would be the same if I came home with you. I'd tell you, don't do that. Okay, sometimes I won't do that. Then I go and take my rest, and when I come back, you're doing it. It would be like that. Because the teacher, although you think he's a person, actually what you need is the doctrine. Your teacher is your understanding. It's your knowledge. It's your wisdom. So wisdom is what I'm trying to equip with you here. Each and every one of you will have wisdom, more or less. Some will have more of it, some will have less of it. But it's something that we can develop. Wisdom can be instilled. It can be assimilated. Once you acquire knowledge and you start applying it into your lab of life, then it becomes your own personal experience, and then it becomes your wisdom. Okay? So that's the foundation on which we lay these bricks. Make sense? That's why we're discussing the Dhamma. So that when you're angry, ladies and gentlemen, you never feel you're helpless. At the beginning, I cannot stop you from feeling angry, but when you are angry, you won't feel helpless, because you'll know where to turn. You'll know to take the right turn. When you are disappointed, you won't immediately react to that. The problem you have right now is reacting to it. That's why whoever, you know, the person that jumped off the seventh story, that's because they felt like they had no choice. I mean, that's why I say that is pitiful. It's not what happened. It's what led to that. That's pitiful. Because if you've not laid down the foundation, then of course it's going to collapse, and there's no point talking about it, crying over it. And this is not going to be the last. There will be many, 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 many more like that, and some will not even, you know, be recorded. Apparently, HIV is on the rise, and official figures state that it's twice as much as it was the previous year. That's quite a stark increase, and it's only going to keep getting greater and greater as years unfold. And so there are a number of reasons why how HIV can be infected, but the main reason that officials report is it's because of, well, let me put it this way, people's vexations. Mental vexations. Isn't sensuality a mental vexation? It's the necessity to experience sensuality. But sensuality itself is a mental vexation. A mind does not need it. But a mind that is vexed due to ignorance and attachment now goes into a state of vexation, and then to relieve itself from that of that vexation, it has to engage in certain behaviors. See, we live in a society where there's plenty of knowledge for our people. I mean, to a great extent, people know how to keep themselves safe. Right? So there's only so much I can say in a sermon. You'll need to think about what I'm trying to get across to you here. People know how to keep themselves safe. But in the heat of the moment, right, all logic goes out the window. What do I mean by in the heat of the moment? When the mind is vexed. And that vexation can come in different flavors. One, it's that you want that experience so badly. The body doesn't. Trust me, the body doesn't. Your body does not require a tiny modicum of sensual pleasure. It's the mind that wants it. The body doesn't. And secondly, the mind also looks for recognition, acknowledgement. Sometimes if you don't do that, then you will get shunned by others. There will be certain behaviors, certain acts that people will expect people in a certain peer group or something to do. And if they don't do it, they'll get stigmatized. Or they'll get, ostracized. And then peer pressure. And then sometimes it's things that they have to do so that they can earn some cash out at the end of that. This is also actually quite rampant now. And why the cash though? The cash is so that they can again, once again, go and buy something that will relieve themselves of their vexation. Sometimes it's drugs. Sometimes it's alcohol. Sometimes it's a smartphone. How dumb. Sometimes it's a computer game. Folks, can you believe me? Can you believe this stuff? There are children of school-going age these days because of all this advertising that's going on. And the peer pressure that they have to experience and endure at school. Everyone's asking, what's the latest game you're playing? Oh, I'm playing this. Haven't you got that yet? Well, I don't have the... you can't say you don't have the money. Because money is now a measure of your place in society, right? So when someone feels that they have less sense, others have more, now they feel that they have, they're undermined. So the mind hates to feel that way. These are the pressures that drive people to do the most bizarre things. It drives you to do the unthinkable, things that you later regret. Like I said, there'll be things at home that you or someone you know might have. They only bought them because it's what they're supposed to have. To hold and maintain that place in society. You're supposed to have that. Your home must be done up in a certain way. Otherwise, you'll become the laughingstock. And the mind cannot bear that because the mind seeks acknowledgement. Please accept me, is what the mind's saying. Can you hear your mind saying that? Pay attention, sometimes you'll hear it. Please, please accept me. This is a mind. How sad. It's what happens when jati happens. That's why until you figure out, ladies and gentlemen, how to stop this jati process, until you work out how you can stop this sense of existence that happens within you, and that can only come through the understanding of the Four Noble Truths, nothing else. I promise you that. You will not learn this at school for science. You will not learn this at university. You will not learn this at the workplace. There is only one place you can learn this, and that is in the Sri Sambuddhasasana. The Four Noble Truths. Until you understand the Four Noble Truths, you cannot get out of this problem. It's a predicament. It's a death sentence. You cannot get out of it. Prove me I'm wrong and I'll come slave for you for a whole year. That outside the Four Noble Truths, you have an answer to this problem? Prove it to me. You have to prove it to me. You can't just come and say, I say so. You have to prove it to me. Outside the Four Noble Truths, you have an answer to this problem. The problem of inferiority. The problem of jealousy. The problem of anger. The problem of regret. The problem of disappointment. Frustrations, annoyances, all of these things. All of those things together. When they come to you, they come to you. They come to you like a tsunami. You know what I'm talking about because you've been there, you've done that, you've experienced this, ladies and gentlemen, although you're looking at me like, you know, never happened to me. You know the many times you banged your head on the wall. You know this. You're having an argument at home. You and your other half, the two people who decided to promise to each other, you know, we will look after each other. We will be there for each other till death do us part, you promise to each other. And I will sacrifice myself for your happiness, honey, you said. And then you had an argument and you found yourself banging your head on the wall. Marriage is not the answer. Divorce is not the answer either. So don't be too hasty. Just in case you're wondering. You know, it's not this extreme or the other extreme. It's not middle either. That's not what it is. It's a different medium. This is one medium on which you operate. The Buddha does not speak of the middle. He speaks of a different medium. It's a different medium. Not this. It's a paradigm shift. You can't find answers to the problems that you are in the same state of mind in which you got into them in the first place. So unless your thinking pattern changes, unless you start to look at the world and understand yourself from a different perspective, every answer you bring to any problem you have will still lead to the same result that you're in before you started to solve that problem. You will solve one problem, but that solution will be the beginning of the next problem. Because you couldn't live alone, you got married. Problem solved? Then why did you need a third person? I know plenty of couples, right? They get together and say, right, from today onwards, you'll be so happy. They hold hands, they go places, right? And they're like, you know, nothing could go wrong for them. And then a couple of years in, they're like, all these fights I'm sure will stop when we have a child. You don't like it when I do that, do you? I know. That's why I do it. Have you not said that? LVZ Atrich has not thought that, right? All these problems will be gone once we have a child. So why don't you then remember what you promised each other when you got married? Like when you are, say, you're living alone, and then you told yourselves, all these problems will go away once we get married. So what happened to that? Don't you realize that what you, the way you think is wrong? Don't you realize that the way you think is wrong? So if the way you think is wrong, then the next thing you're going to think is bound to be wrong. I don't know whether these things hurt you, but they're not intended to hurt. I just want you to open your eyes, ladies and gentlemen, and wake up. You know, it will be quite simple and easy for me to just keep quiet and let you just keep walking blindly. You just keep walking and jump and fall off a cliff, like everyone who did before you. You'll just be sleepwalking and then you'll fall off a cliff. And then once you fall off the cliff, it'll be game over and then start again. You come back to the root and to the foot of the hill and start again. And then you just keep walking. When you come to the cliff and fall off. And then start again. This is it. That's your life. Start, go up the hill, and then fall off the cliff. And then come back again, and start, walk up the hill, and fall off the cliff, and start again. Flawed thinking. That's what it is. So until you feel like you have to climb to the top of this mountain to be happy, you will keep doing it. And because none of these things make you happy, because happiness is not there along the way, it's like the donkey that keeps going after the carrot. When does the donkey stop? There's a carrot hung in front of it. When does the donkey stop? Technically, when should the donkey stop? When it gets to eat the carrot, right? But the carrot is tied to itself, and it's a little distance away from its mouth. So when does the donkey stop? It cannot stop because it wants the carrot. So it'll just keep on walking. Don't you believe, ladies and gentlemen, don't you feel at least like all these achievements that you have had in your life up until this point were those carrots that are hung in front of you? The purpose of the donkey in the story is to somehow eat the carrot. The purpose of your life somehow is to find happiness. Yeah, because for the donkey, that is happiness. For you, for the donkey, happiness is a carrot. For you, happiness is the various things that you've been doing. So in the story, that was a donkey. In this story, I didn't say that. It's the same story again. These are those carrots. I need you to see them as carrots. Carrots that are only tied to your back. You will never achieve that happiness. You can do the thing, but the thing won't make you happy. You know, if you work hard, you work day and night, you do your studies well, you do all that, one day you can become an engineer. Yes, you can. But that won't make you happy. Don't become an engineer because you want to be happy, is what I'm saying. If you want to become an engineer, become an engineer. Don't do it for the sake of happiness. If you want to get married, but don't do it for the sake of happiness. Don't ever do it for the sake of happiness, because it will never make you happy. How am I happy then? I'm not married. Don't have kids for the sake of happiness. Have kids even if you want to have kids. See, I'm not saying you shouldn't have kids. Did you hear me say that? Did I tell you not to have kids? No, have kids if you want, have kids. Have 100 of them if you want. Why do I care? But I do care about one thing. It's not whether you have kids or not. It's whether you're happy or not. Because that's why you come here on a Sunday morning. You have come here to ask me, Swaminarayan, I'm not happy. What can I do? Because if you're here, I have to tell you what I know. And here's what I know. These are all carrots. Don't buy a car if you're buying it to be happy. Because cars don't make you happy. Cars get you from A to B. Some cars can get you there faster. Some cars can get you there safer. So if you want to get there safer, buy a safe car. If you want to get there faster, buy a fast car. Some cars can get you there cheaper. Then buy a more fuel-efficient car. That is what you have to decide your choice of car on. Do you want to get there fast, safe, and for less? Then buy that kind of car. Do your research and buy that kind of car. But when you're at the showroom, don't let your emotions drive you. Well, I say don't, you can't not. Easier said than? I know, it's what you're thinking. That's because there's an internal fire that's burning within you, fueled by the indoctrinations that people around you have been giving you. You know, right when you were younger, did you not grow up, especially maybe typically the men in the house, right? Growing up, did you not have this car in your mind, this brand that you wanted to buy one day? I had one. When I was only, 10, 12, by that point, I'd already decided what kind of car I was going to get. It was not based on how fast it was, how fuel efficient it was, how safe it was, none of those things. It was simply based on what people had told me. And they were talking to me about the fact that, you know, there was a nice car, and it made them feel important. And the people were saying, you know, if you drive in a car like this, you know, you look respectable. It's what a gentleman should drive. So driving in one makes you a gentleman. Indoctrinations. So we don't validate those indoctrinations, do we? When someone says, hey, there's a really nice piece of cake, you should try it. Do you ever ask, why do you say it's nice? Prove it's nice to me before you eat it. You don't ask them to prove it. You just take it at face value. You just take it for, you know, whatever they say, you just accept it. You know, there's a TV advert. And they say there's a new brand of cake that's just come out. And in the advert they say, this is the most delicious thing, right? A life is not worth having lived if you have not tried a slice of this cake. Now when you go to the shop, right? Do you ask the shopkeeper to prove what he's just said before you buy it? Do you? Do you ask for proof before you buy it? No, what do? You simply ask how much it is. You pay whatever it is, you buy the cake, you bring it home. Now who's the lab rat? Come on, folks. I can tell you one thing for sure. Right? Most of the time, the people who are on these adverts, yes, I'll let you have the privilege of saying the other half of that sentence. Most of the people on the adverts, they don't even stick any of that in their mouths. They don't try it. They don't bother eating it because it's not good for their figure. And besides, they don't eat any of that garbage. They have a very strict diet regime and they don't eat any of that stuff. You know, most celebrities who come on these adverts to say that, you know, this is a nice cookie, this is a nice drink, this is a nice cake, this is nice this, that and the other, they don't eat that stuff because if they kept on eating like that, you know, for every advert they have to come on and say this is good, this is good, this is good. And you know, there's a show they at their in their homes they have they open the pantry and it's just full of that biscuit or that cake, and that's all they have. No, they don't do like that. But people fall for it. The reason people fall for it is because when indoctrinations come your way, you don't validate them. How can you validate when you don't have a yardstick to measure it against? No wonder. The yardstick to measure it against is the yardstick that the Buddha gives you, anicca, dukkha and anatta. And the principles that expand from around that. So without that yardstick, you are susceptible. And so what anyone tells you, you take it as gospel. For one reason, you're all looking for happiness. So when someone comes up to you and they promise you happiness, you don't care what it is that they're trying to give you, you buy it. Because they say it's happiness that they're offering you. What does that tell you about how desperate you are? You watch an advert on TV, you don't even ask them to validate those claims. But you go to the shop, you pay your money, and you buy it and you bring it home. You don't ask for them to validate those claims. What that tells you, ladies and gentlemen, is you are desperate for happiness. And that is not wrong. It's fair that you are desperate for happiness because that is your purpose of coming into existence, to seek happiness. But you've tried every trick in the book except for one. You've tried every trick in the book and it has not made you happy. Of course you're going to be desperate. So the older you are, you tend to be more desperate for happiness. Because you now tried so many different things. You got property, you've got wealth, you've got a job, right? Or you're retired and you've earned yourself enough money. You've got prestige, you've got this, that, the other. You've got friends, family, grandchildren, all that. But you're still not happy. Just imagine that. If you just kept on doing something for 80 years and you still haven't achieved what you wanted, how desperate would you be? Just think about this for a second, right? Imagine I asked you, I give you a bit of a sticky, what do you call it? What's that clay stuff, that sticky you can put on a wall? Blue tack, yes. I don't know if it's a brand name, but please forgive me. Okay, right, so you take some blue tack, right? And I ask you to put it on the wall. Okay, so you come up, you put it on the wall. And you're, oh, right, okay, it's dead. And then the moment you look away, it drops on the floor. Okay, so what do you have to do next? Pick it up and stick it on the wall again. And you do that. And it stays there for a split second, but the moment you look away, it's back on the floor. Then I say, no, you have to put it up. So I'm your friend, and you are doing me a favor, because I'm your friend. I said, please, can you put the blue tack on the wall? So now you put it back up again, and it falls again. How many times are you going to keep doing this? 3. I'll keep counting up. You tell me when you say, no, Swaminas, I don't care if you're going to stop being my friend. I cannot do it after that. 5, 10. I want you to picture this, okay? You picking it up, putting it up on the wall. You have to bend down, pick it up, put it on the wall. Okay? You've done it now for 10 times. The same bit of blue tack. I'm not going to give you another bit. And you can't pick another wall either. The same ball, same spot, same blue tack. 10. 15. Of course not. Why not? Because you start vexing. Because you start vexing. But just imagine, if you had no other choice, you had to do it. I don't feed you until you do it. You're not going to be fed until you do it. No, you're starting to become hungry as well. Because all the bending up and lifting up and, you know, all that physical activity, you're starting to become hungry. By this point, you've done it for 50 times. Can you imagine that? 50 times. Bending down, picking up the blue tack, putting it up on the wall. Moment you take your finger away, it falls on the floor. You've done it for 50 times now. I really want you to picture this. 50 times you've done this now. But the deal is, you don't get fed until you stick it up on the wall. At one point you're going to say, I'll die instead. I'd rather die. I just can't bear this anymore. Yes or no? So the more times you keep doing something that is fruitless, useless, the more you get vexed. Now just imagine, by the 200th time, you are now 80 years old. Your task was a simple one. Put that bit of sticky, blue tack on the wall. And you've been doing it for the last 80 years and it still doesn't stay on. You're now weak, you're now old, your knees can't even hold you up straight anymore. Your back's giving in. Right? All that bending and lifting up. You know that this is this is a metaphor for what you've been doing in life. You know, you wouldn't have grown so old if it hadn't been for some of the things that you did in life in order to achieve happiness. You wouldn't have grown so old. Physically, I mean, time would have passed, yes. But physically? Just go back in time and think about some of the things you had to do. All that heavy lifting, carrying, moving. And sometimes, you know, sitting in one place. You take a meal and you sit behind your computer. That's the worst thing you can do for your physical health. It is said the last thing you should do after you take a meal is run. That's fatal. The second worst thing to do after you take a meal is sit down and do nothing. That's the second worst thing to do after you've taken a meal. Sit down and just rest. What you're supposed to do after you've taken a meal is take a slow walk. Just walk for about 20 minutes or so to help the digestion of food. Because once you sit down, your lifespan shortens. This is things that the rishis have said in the past, and it is true. But in today's day and age, right, your work, right, and the lifestyle that you have built for yourselves requires you to, as soon as you've had your lunch, what should you do? Come back to your desk. See? Don't you think, in trying to earn yourselves a living, you have earned yourself an early death? It's ironical, isn't it? What are you trying to earn yourself? Huh? Living. What have you ended up earning yourself? An early death. This is the irony. And that's because, well, everyone around you says that a good job is a desk job. These are the top jobs. You know, you are born with a physical body. A physical body requires physical activity. You are born to be physically active. But people are not anymore. They won't even go to the shop down the street. For that also, they have to get into the car and drive. Don't you know people like that? Where have you seen them? Even for that, they have to get into the car and drive. It's just 2 blocks down the street. But why, when you can have the comfort of your of a car? If I can afford the petrol, if I can afford the car, all I have to do is get in and turn the ignition. Just drive. You forget that you live with a body. This is a physical body that requires physical activity. I know this is not anicca dukkha anatta, but you know, you need to live as long as you can so that you can understand the Dhamma. It would be such a shame if, you know, this generation lives until they're 80. I think in a few years' time, we'll start shutting down by 60. Sorry. Or they will prolong your life from 60 onwards, but that life will be useless. You'll be plugged to machines, and machines will be very sophisticated. They can keep you alive, yes, for the next 20 years, but for what? If you can't even bring yourself to a sermon, if you can't bring yourself to the temple, if you can't take yourself to the church, if you can't take yourself somewhere so you can do some good and earn some merits, what's the point of being alive? Just to exist. Because if you exist, you have to endure existence. Make it livable. Make it bearable. So I appeal to you and I urge you. I know this is taking a bit of a sidetrack, but after you've had a meal, don't do one of the two worst things to be doing. I know you won't go for a run. That is common sense. But what people are doing today more so than not is, as soon as, even when you're eating your sat down, after that you take the lift. I mean, people don't even take the stairs. Take the lift and they come back to their desk and they start working. These days you just jump from one electronic device to the other. Right? Phone to laptop, laptop to computer, computer to desktop, desktop to phone. That's why people have no friends. They only have electronic devices. They have no friends. They're connected to friends, but they don't really have any friends. How many Facebook friends do you have? But how many of them will be there for you when you need them? So even friends is just a number. What kind of life is that? I don't have Facebook, but I have 500 friends at home. Yeah. How about you? I'm a lucky man. That sounds sane, folks. You know, we need to open our eyes and actually deal with life as it is and start living real life, face reality, come out of these fantasy worlds that people have created for us and we've got lost in it. You know, take off that blindfold for a second. You don't even know you're wearing one, right? That's the problem. You don't even know that there's a blindfold around your head. That's how bad it is. You don't even know that you have a blindfold around your head. That's how bad it is. They've been so good at it. The society in which you live, they've been so good at it to tie this blindfold around your head without you even knowing it. And now you just walk blindly. You don't know what's good for you. You don't know what's bad for you. You don't know what's right. You don't know what's wrong. That's why when you're angry, you do the worst thing that you could do. You retaliate. Someone says something, you say something in return. Worst thing you can do. That's why after you had a meal, you sit down at your computer and you just carry on working. You might say, well, what can I do, Swami Nuhansa? You know, that's my work. I have to do it. I'm required to be at my desk soon after my lunch. I understand that, yes. But it's the trap that you've got yourself into. Because you fell into this trap the society that society indoctrinated you, saying that, you know, these are the kind of things that are, you know, these are the white collar jobs, these are the blue collar jobs. You're supposed to do the white collar stuff because that's what everyone should try to aim for. That's why from a young age you have to get a good education so that you can get yourself a job where you can sit behind a computer, right, on a revolving chair in a nice air conditioned room, right? That's the kind of image that has always been planted in our minds. Do you ever tell your children, Buddha, when you grow up, become a farmer? No one says that. Never pick up a mammoty. Oh, here's a crowbar. Right? Go and make a living out of that. You know, after all you have to do is live. But we have so much comforts around ourselves. We're just not happy. Comfort is not the same as happiness. Look at all the material things we have around us. You know, what good is it to live in a palace if you're not happy inside? Wouldn't you rather live in a hut and be happy instead? But the problem is, when you indoctrinate people to think that happiness is in the palace and it's not nowhere to be found in a hut, now they have to go building a palace for themselves. It's what has happened to us. Most people, most of you, I would probably even imagine, would find it very difficult to leave your palaces and shift to a hut. Even if you went to a hut, you'd have to put a label up there, Royal Hut. It'd be very difficult to do that. Because in your mind, you seek acknowledgement. Back in those days, people understood that the purpose of their life was to achieve real happiness. So they didn't expend their valuable lives trying to build palaces up. They didn't do that. What they did was they lived with the bare necessities. As soon as they found them, what they did was they took themselves to the temple. They spent their time with the Mahasangha. They spent the time with the Dhamma. And the Dhamma was the only thing that could actually give them happiness. As I said, the Four Noble Truths, that's what they spent their time with. Otherwise, why did the Bodhisattva, the prince, why did he renounce his three palaces and go seek his happiness under a tree in the wilderness? How could he find a happiness that he didn't find in a palace under a tree? What does that tell you about happiness? It's not in a palace. He had an army. He was the son of a king. 500 women would dance for him day and night. At his beck and call, they were there. Whatever he wanted, he'd be offered. Anything, just about anything. He could, all he had to do was demand, I want this. A minute later, it was there. Slaves, slaves. Women, women. Food, food. Entertainment, entertainment. Music, music. Dance, dance. Palace, palace. Horses, horses. Whatever he wanted, always was there. And he gave all that up and he found happiness under a tree. What does that tell you about happiness? Where are you still looking for your happiness? In a palace? With a woman? With a man? On TV? Listening to music? Playing games? Why do you think you will find happiness somewhere where the most intelligent and wise person, the smartest person that was ever born, could not find What makes you so sure that you will find it where the Bodhisattva couldn't find it? Where the Buddha couldn't find it? That's what I'm saying, ladies and gentlemen. You have been blindfolded and you don't even know it. That's why I want you to wake up. You know, you guys... Sorry, I didn't mean to use that word. I love you, really. All of you. All of you. You are so fortunate because you have great power. What did I mean by power earlier? The power of? Power of choice. Most, if not all of you, have the power of choice. Because you come from respectable families, you have a good background, you have a good upbringing, you have education on your side, you have wealth, at least to a reasonable extent. So you have the power of choice. If you considered you and the rest of, let's say, the local population in our country, right? People would give their right arm to have what you have today. Meaning you have the power of choice. So why don't you make the right choice? Most people, they'll say, Swaminarayan, I can't go for the right choice, although I know it's the right choice, because there'll be no one to look after my family. I still have a mortgage to pay. And they live in a hut, and they still have a mortgage to pay. You'll also say you have a mortgage to pay, but you have live in a palace. You don't need to live in a palace. You could downsize if you wanted to, and then pay off your mortgage and have then some to put in your bank. So why would you rather live in a palace and pay a mortgage for another 25 years when you could move to somewhere that was enough to sustain you physically, because that's what a house is there for, to be a roof over your head, to keep you safe from the elements, right? And put that money in the bank and live off of that. And then invest the time that you have without having to go work so you can pay a mortgage. Why don't you do that and spend that time trying to understand the Dhamma, the Four Noble Truths, which is the only way you can actually achieve happiness? Because it's not to be found in the palace that you live in right now. This is just food for thought. I'm not saying tomorrow go and sell your house. I'm just saying this is just food for thought. I want you to think along these lines. Not on my behalf. Not on my behalf. I've already achieved what I wanted to achieve. I am where I want to be today. There's nowhere else I'd rather be. I'm where I want to be today. I don't speak on my behalf then, I speak on yours. See, today, because you fell for an indoctrination, perhaps you have a car on which you have to pay finance. And you have to pay that for the next 15 years. And then once you're done with that, you have to upgrade to the next model because people expect you to. Because that's the kind of people you surround yourselves with. They're always hungry, always thirsty, never satisfied. So because you live with people like that, they will always keep pushing you. This is peer pressure. They always keep pushing you up that hill until one day you fall off the cliff. Sometimes why do you let people do that to you? When you know now that happiness is not in that car. A car is there to get you from A to B. Safer, faster, for less. That's what a car's there for. So why do you have to buy yourself that particular car, that branded car that you have, like I had a dream once, and then keep paying finance on that, and then go to work every day for the rest of your life, when that's not going to make you happy, ladies and gentlemen? And why do you give these goals to your children as well? I mean, why do you defile their minds with this nonsense? I'm not accusing you of doing any of these things. I just want you to, you know, I'm just throwing it out there. Not anyone in particular or any individual, right? So please don't feel that way. But I'm just putting it out there. I need you to take whatever part of this is relevant to you. If it doesn't apply to you, pass it to the next one behind you. But if it does apply to you, please think on your behalf. How many more years do you have to experiment with life? Ask yourself. Because right now you're still experimenting, aren't you? After 999 attempts, he ultimately discovered that this is how the light bulb works, and then the experimentation stopped. What was his name? Thomas Alva Edison. After 999 attempts, it is said, he stopped at the 1,000th attempt because ultimately he discovered this is how the light bulb works. Because you still haven't discovered your light bulb, you're still experimenting. How many experiments have you conducted by now? times the number of years you've been alive, you have been experimenting. When are you going to discover? Do you just want to be a failure? Is that what you want people to say when you're gone? You know, when you're gone, your friends will come, they'll stand around your tomb and they'll sing all sorts of praises. I can tell you that. This man, he should not have died. This woman, this lady, she should not have died. She was such a wonderful person. They'll read all these wonderful eulogies. Things that you liked for them to have said while you were still alive, but, you know, they didn't because they didn't like you that much. But now that you're dead, you know, they don't have to hold themselves accountable to what they're saying. Right? So they'll just say all sorts of things when you're gone. But to make whom happy? To make whom happy? Now you're just rotting away. 6 foot under. You're just rotting away. That would be an 8 years worth of experimenting done, and yet you would be in a failure. You know, you were born a failure. That's why you were born. You live a failure, and then ultimately you will die a failure. You will have done many things, countless things. You'll have gone to school, you'll have gone to university, you'll have done jobs, 10 jobs maybe, one after the other, after the other, after the other. That's why you say, moving up the career ladder. Nonsense. That's not moving up the career ladder. What you want to do is, because this didn't work out, you're going to try the next one and see if that's going to make you happy. That's what you're doing. How do I know this? Yes, I read it in a book. That's what people say, you know, they dress it up in nice words, moving up the career ladder. But ultimately, these are all experiments. You're experimenting with the most precious thing that you have. I mean, come on. How can you be so bold? How can you be so brave? You're experimenting with the most precious thing you have, and that is your life. How many cars have you been through by now? How many girlfriends have you been through by now? How many houses have you moved from one to the other by now? How many jobs have you tried by now? How many countries have you traveled to by now? Experimenting? Some of you will probably have maybe traveled to half the countries in the world because you enjoy traveling. It's not because you enjoy traveling, actually. What you're trying to do is to find what? Happiness. How many flights have you boarded by now? How many hotels have you stayed at by now? All because you thought that was going to make you happy? When are you going to end this experimenting? I've stopped. I found the light bulb. How many more experiments do you want to do, I ask you? Forget everyone else in this room right now. Just you, I'm talking to you alone, individually. Forget everyone else in this room right now. I'm asking you, how many more experiments do you want to do with your life, sir? Is that what your life is for? To experiment? To execute someone else's experiment? Then they've given you the steps, the instructions. These are the indoctrinations that have been passed down to you. And now you just experiment yourself so just because someone else said so. Did you validate? Did you ask the person who handed that experiment over to you, you know, prove to me that this worked for you? You never did that. When someone says, here's a nice piece of cake, it's delicious, the first thing you have to do is prove it. That's what you should say before you even try it. They will not be able to prove it. Because deliciousness is not something in the cake. You ask them to prove it. Someone says to you, this is a delicious piece of cake. Ask them to prove it. Okay, said, okay, have this for the rest of your life. Have 20 slices of this and tell me. What will they say? They won't. They won't come back. They won't come back to bother you. Because if it's delicious, then there should not be a limit to how much you can eat and enjoy that deliciousness, right? So the moment you ask them to prove it, that's it. They won't be able to, but you don't. Someone says, this is delicious, let me have it. Let me try it. And you have the cake. It's not because you want cake. It's because you want to be happy. That's the wrong thing to do. Because the moment you stick that cake in your mouth, your body has to deal with it now. You know, for a split second it'll go past your tongue and you'll experience that, but the body has to deal with it now. Don't you think? And then 3 months on, you'll get a report, a blood report that says too much sugar. And then you keep doing that, then for the rest of your life, you'll have to live on insulin. Why? All because you didn't ask them to validate their claims. You just took it at face value. That's why I say, even at 85, ladies and gentlemen, you need a teacher. Until you discover the light bulb, you need a teacher. Otherwise, you are the one on whom the experiment is being done. I don't know why you don't understand the gravity of this. You are the lab rat. And they're experimenting on you. Are you okay with that? They make you feel like you have the power of choice. And then they indoctrinate you to make the choices that they want you to make. All the while making you feel like you have the power of choice. What good is the power of choice if the choice you're making is one that someone else wants you to make? That's like you can go left or right, but if you go right, I shoot you. That's not so much a choice, is it? That's what people does to you. You go today, get home today, right, and go stand in front of the mirror, and then look at yourself in the mirror, and you ask yourself the question, is this who I wanted to be, or what other people wanted me to be? You'll be amazed. Look at your hair. Look at the way you do your hair up. Look at the brand of spectacles you wear. Look at the shirt you wear. the trousers you wear, if you have a belt around you, look at it. Look at the brand. Look at the style. And ask yourself the question, is this me? Is this who I wanted to be? Or is this what people around me wanted to be? Lab rats. Then look around you. Everything you see, everything that meets your eye, is not what you wanted. What you wanted was one thing: happiness. That's all you wanted. Folks, you are so innocent, honestly. All you want is happiness, nothing more, nothing less. You don't want the world. You don't want anything. You don't want money. You don't want houses. You don't want richness. You don't want lands. You don't want titles. You don't want any of that. Actually, all you want is happiness. Is that so much to ask? All you want is happiness. But because you keep asking the wrong people, they sign you up in their experiments. How is that ethical? I ask you. It is said when you do a social experiment, you have to consider the ethics of it. Right? You have to let people know that they are being involved in an experiment. In psychology, for example, when you do a social experiment, you have to inform them that they're engaged in an experiment. Right? So don't you feel that people have engaged in a psychological experiment? Society? They keep feeding stuff into your mind all because you want happiness. The only reason you bite that bullet, you take what they say, is because you are still looking for happiness. If you stop looking for happiness having found it, if you stop looking for happiness, you will not be a slave to all these things that people want you to do. They would not be able to dictate your moves and your actions. But today they can, because you still haven't found happiness. And because you want that, people promise you that and they make you do all the things that they want you to do. Don't you feel used? Don't you feel used? The better word is abused. Don't you feel violated? Don't you? I don't know whether you understand the gravity of the situation here. Oh, come on, smile. You're beginning to wonder, can I actually smile? That's why the Buddha asks, Ko nuha so kim anando? Nicham pajjalite sati, andhakare na onadda padipanna gavesata. The Buddha asks, how can you be laughing like this? His words, not mine. How can you be smiling like this? When you are lost in darkness? Wow. These are the Buddha's words. It's in the Dhammapada. How can you be laughing like this? How can you be dancing like this? How can you be singing and partying like this? How can you be living a carefree life like this when you are lost in darkness? Don't you want to come out of that darkness and seek the truth? Seek the light? That's the meaning of the Dhammapada stanza. See how profound it is. It is the same ask I make today of you, ladies and gentlemen, because the Buddha asked me to. I I ask you today, once again, please think carefully about what you want to do with your lives. Do you want to continue to be the lab rats and become the specimens of the people who are experimenting with you? Or do you want to actually make your life meaningful, purposeful? Otherwise, I'll tell you once again what's going to happen. You're going to keep walking up that hill. And you think you're walking together, right? If you have a boyfriend, a girlfriend, you think you'll both hold hands and walk up that hill together. If you have a husband, a wife, you think you're holding hands and you're walking up that mountain together. If you're walking, if you think you're walking up as a family together, all five of you, all six of you. You think you're walking up that hill together, but at the end of that, remember, you will only, you can even jump together. Isn't that what people do? They go to world's end and then they hold hands and they jump together, right? But do they die together? They don't die together, do they? They can walk up together, they can jump together, but they die alone. Wake up. Wake up. What time is it? Time to stop. Did I hurt your feelings? Yes? I don't intend to hurt any of you, and I hope you know that. What guarantee can I give you that I don't intend to hurt you? What you give is what you get. If I come here with intention to hurt, I will be hurt. I'm a bhikkhu. I don't hurt, I heal. But sometimes as a doctor would pull out a thorn that is deep inside your body, but as they pull it out, it might hurt. You must understand as a patient that this is not the doctor that's hurting me. It's retrieving the thorn. It's the thorn that hurts, not the doctor. If you want, we can leave the thorn inside, but it's going to fester. And before you know it, they'll have to amputate you if you leave it there. But right now we have a choice, we have a chance, we have an opportunity. Because we have this meeting. You and I, we still have this meeting, don't we? This meeting is the product of many causes. One of these days, this meeting will end. It will. It'll either end on your part or it'll end on my part. But you know that nothing lasts forever. So this meeting will also end one day. Maybe this is the last meeting. Maybe it's next week. All we know for certain is we have met until this point. I can't tell you anything about the future. Only what is present is true. But here on, the next second, I can't tell you what's going to happen. That is how unpredictable our lives are. But they have given us a 120-year lease of unpredictability. See how terrible they've made the terms and conditions of that lease. They give you 120 years, but with no guarantee as to when they'll kick you out. Who would sign that kind of lease? Would you sign a lease on a property that said you can live here for the next 10 years, but whenever we decide, we kick you out? That's not a lease. But while you're there, you have to pay. That's not a lease. But it's a foul deal, I understand, but it's what we got ourselves into. You didn't read the terms and conditions before you signed the document. So here we are then. So I don't know when our last meeting would be. This might be our last meeting. Because this meeting itself is the product of causes. All there is cause and effect. My intention to look after you, to heal you alone is not enough. If that were so, the Buddha would not have passed away. He would still be here and I wouldn't have to do this job. He would do it by himself. He doesn't need my help for that. But the Buddha's intention to heal every living soul itself is not enough. That helped him become the Buddha and render that service for 45 years. But then fate would have it that it was time for that meeting to end. So it mattered not. The great elder Ananda was crying his eyes out. He who loved the Buddha like his own self. But when it was time to go, it was time to go. So if the Buddha's meeting with us ended, then this meeting will most certainly end. Until that time, we have an opportunity. This is a window of opportunity. In this window of opportunity, many things have to be true. I have to be present, you have to be present. I have to be able to speak, you have to be able to listen. You have to be able to make sense of what I am saying. I have to be able to say something sensible. You have to be able to remember what I am saying. What if you lose your memory? And you get dementia. Then what happens after that? Then it's pointless. This meeting would be pointless after that. I mean, you know, if you've had a long night last night, if you stayed up till, 3-4 in the morning, if you come here, you're going to start dozing off. See, how many causes must line up? Because you have come here with a physical body, and that body needs rest. So when the mind is given an opportunity to actually earn itself its true rest, if the body doesn't like to play, still, the causes don't line up. That's why this is almost a miracle, ladies and gentlemen. This is almost a miracle. The fact that this is happening right now is almost a miracle. But we thank our lucky stars. We thank our good merits and our fortune. And we make use of this opportunity. That's why I promise you, none of these words are to hurt you. It's to help you see a reality that you don't without the help of a teacher. The same was true for me. If we could all do this by ourselves, there would not be a need for the advent of a Buddha. Then we could all just become Buddhas. But that's not how things work. You know, if it all could be Buddhas, the world would not be able to sustain itself. For the world to sustain itself, once in a while, a Buddha has to come. It's all part of the system. It's all part of the system. For existence to be there forever, from time to time, there has to be a garbage collection. So that redundant things get removed. That's the likes of me. I'm redundant. The likes of me are no longer necessary for this world. Because I don't sustain this world. I don't contribute to the existence of this world. This sermon doesn't help the existence of this world, does it? What have I been talking to you about? How to cease existence. So, people like me should not be there everywhere. Otherwise this world wouldn't continue. Once in a blue moon, few and far between, manageable. That's okay. But if there were hundreds and thousands of us, this world wouldn't survive. So for survival to happen, for existence to happen, it's only very rarely should someone who carries the Buddha's message come around and preach it. And it's only very rarely should someone actually listen to it. If everyone in town came to this sermon, it could not happen. A volcano would erupt and stop it from happening. Because this world has to continue. Existence has to continue. Existence has to exist. So that's why I say this is almost a miracle. You were selected this time round. That's your good merits. They get selected from time to time. You were selected this time round. So now that you are selected, I don't want to be sugarcoating things. I don't want to be pussyfooting around. I think you want me to be serious, at least from time to time. Yes, I mean, we have a joke, we have a laugh, you know, because it's what we do as social animals. But that's not what you're coming here for. You could stay at home and watch a comedy, right, if you just wanted to laugh. So I'm not just here to pat your egos or make you feel good, right, and say how good you are and all that, because you don't need me to do that. You have plenty of people around you who always 24/7 remind you what a great person you are. You're probably a manager, a boss, a leader to many scores of people, and they constantly keep telling you that you're the best thing. But here, we are all on the same level. No ups, downs here. No seniors, no juniors here. We are all fair and square, all on the same level. Because we are all here for one thing and one thing alone. And that is, how the heck do we achieve happiness? So here, the only teacher is the Buddha's Dhamma. I am a student as much as you are. As I preach to you, I contemplate. I benefit most from this sermon. Because I have to first think it, and then I have to find the words to say it. Sometimes if I don't find the perfect words, I still have understood the point. But the words fail me. But that doesn't mean that I haven't understood the point, have I? So I benefit most from the sermon. You benefit second. That's why what you give is what you get. Of course. Even if all of you fell asleep, one person in this room wouldn't fall asleep. Who's that? Because what I'm trying to do is to help you wake up. So how can I fall asleep? That's what I'm saying. This is almost a miracle. The fact that this is happening right now. Please don't take this for granted. Your merits are what is doing this for you. So please understand the importance, the significance of all that is going on around you and make the most of it. Finally, ask yourself this question. Today, I'm just only talking about you people, okay? Today, you come along every Sunday religiously and you have started following this series of talks because I believe, and that is because you have found that this is what you were looking for. Yes? And you feel convinced, with conviction you know that at the end of this I can see a way that I can achieve my goal. Does that not mean then, until our encounter, you were lost? You might have gone to other sermons maybe. You might have gone to other classes, taken other lectures, right? Gone with other teachers and so on. But why did you leave all that and come here? Perhaps one day you will leave this and go somewhere else. That's okay. Because wherever you have your solution, that's where you should be. If it's not here, then you should be there. But that's why I say I only speak to you, Lord. People, you are here. Because you keep coming every week. Does that not tell you then, until our encounter, you were lost? For how many long years were you lost? See? That's the point, ladies and gentlemen. You were lost. Today you feel that you have found the answer. So don't waste any more time. Don't waste any more time. Take this opportunity and make the most of it. We'll continue the conversation next week. I meant to continue last week's sermon. Well, we talked about value, but I hope I have given some value in some other way. Value to your life, actually. Right, let's start for the merits and bring today's sermon to a close. Let us all take a moment to transfer all the merits that we have all acquired today by making offerings to the infinite virtues of the Noble Triple Gem, observing the precepts, taking refuge in the Noble Triple Gem, listening to the Dhamma and creating a conducive environment for all to come along and practice the path and attain their salvation. First and foremost, let us take a moment to transfer these merits to the bhikkhus and bhikkhunis, upasakas and upasikas around the world, who have since time immemorial protected and preserved the sublime teachings of the Buddha and passed it down through the generations of the noble lineage in the form of the Tripitaka, which is thankfully available to us today to study, understand and comprehend the Dhamma. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to all the monks and nuns resident in your local temples and nunneries and throughout the world, the Mahanayaka Theras, the Anunayaka Theras of all the chapters. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to Guru Swami Nuhanse, my teacher, as well as all the monks resident at the monastery and the Anagarikas and the Anagarikas attached to the monastery. Let us take a moment to transfer these merits to those who make great efforts to disseminate the teachings of the Buddha, be that by translating these talks, sharing them out with others or inviting others to join them. May they all rejoice in these merits. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to friends of the monastery, our devotees who, for the sake of merits to help them attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana, continue to sustain the Mahasangha. This includes all of you who provide the Mahasangha with shelter, arms, robes and medicines, as well as pass on their know-how and continue to extend their well wishes. May they all rejoice in these merits, and by the power of these merits, may they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to our mothers and fathers, brothers and sisters, sons and daughters, grandparents, uncles, aunts, cousins, nephews and nieces, our friends, our acquaintances, our employers and our employees and our teachers, as well as anyone and everyone who've helped us, supported us and assisted us in any way, shape or form possible and available to them. May they be healed of any physical and mental ailments and overcome any obstacles to their spiritual progress. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to the devas and brahmas, spirits and demons, primarily the Sakadeva, as well as all the numerous gods and deities who have committed themselves to fulfill and preserve the Sambuddha Sasana. Let us transfer these merits to our guardian deities who keep a watchful eye over us and keep us out of harm's way. May they prosper in divine power and wisdom. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Let us also take a moment to transfer these merits to those who have passed away in our name, our forefathers, our ancestors, our loved ones, reminding ourselves that it is in the blood, sweat and tears they have shed on our behalf. Today we are able to enjoy life as it is and practice the path in peace and harmony. Let us also transfer this message to members of the armed forces as well as the police force who sacrificed their lives to protect the peace and harmony of our nation, as well as those who lost their lives in the war, be they friend or foe. Let us also transfer this message to those who lost their lives to natural disasters and calamities such as tsunamis and earthquakes, landslides, fires, floods, pandemics and so on, reminding ourselves that in this infinitely long journey of samsara, they will all have been mothers and fathers to us, friends to us. With an abundance of loving kindness and compassion towards all of them, let us transfer all the merits that we have acquired to all. May, by the power of these merits, if any of them have been born in the woeful plains, they redeem themselves to be born in the blissful plane. May they abstain from the unmeritorious deeds, fulfill the meritorious deeds, fulfill the Noble Eightfold Path, and may they all attain the supreme bliss of Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And finally, may by the power and blessings of all the merits we have acquired throughout the day, we be able to witness the advent of many hundreds of thousands of arahants on this blessed land. And finally, may you and I and everyone who has helped make this program a success become a Arahata Nuhansa or an Arahat Theranin Nuhansa in this life itself and in the era of this Buddha Sasana itself. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. May the blessings of the Noble Triple Gem be with you all. Members of the Mahasangha will now transfer the blessings to you.
Raga kinnen midatnva Dvesha kinnen midatnva Moha kinnen midatnva Nibbana parama sukhayan Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayan Sukhita taravetnva Mamada siyalu loka siyalu satnvayo Nibbana parama sukhayan Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayan Sukhita taravetnva Nibbana parama sukhayan Sukhita taravetnva Raga gini niveva Dvesha gini niveva Moha gini niveva Nivan sapa labeva Nivan sapa labeva Nivan sapa labeva
Tunulvange suvisi ananta maha guna belen Sielu loka sielu satyoma Nibbana parama sukhen sukhita taravetva Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.